Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today is David Hulley, Yanis Janaeus, and Mike Gregg. This episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham away against Huddersfield Town. Before that, we'll have another segment of the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, which includes us debating questions I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for the fans to comment on. As always, we have two very interesting topics to break down. Also, to begin the show, we have a few subjects to get us going in a segment I call the Cottage Talk Quick Shots. We do have a full show, but I want to bring on my co-host. Let me bring them on. First of all, David, how you doing?
Hi again, Russ. Hi, everybody. Didn't realize Yanis was joining us as well, so it's a real heavyweight show today. The three sort of regular stalwarts together for once.
Yes, we have an action-packed co-host grid, I guess you could say, with the three of you. And, of course, we have a great deal to go through. David, I just talked to you yesterday. We're doing it again today.
Yeah, I know. Well, I thought I had a week off this week, but obviously I stepped in to help out with the other shows as I was free anyway. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how we move on from the disappointment of Wednesday night, obviously. And, you know, we talked about it a lot last night, and I think we got some good points over, and I've seen some, you know, some interesting comments as well on Twitter, you know, people talking about, you know what I've said, really, that on this case alone, you can't blame too much on Kit for the, you know, you can't blame the red card on Kit, really. You can't blame us missing chances on Kit. You know, perhaps you can't even blame some of the defender on Kit, although I think, you know, as a defender himself, you'd hope that it was a bit better. But, you know, what's he going to do tomorrow? So let's talk about it and get into it, because I'm looking forward to it.
I am looking forward to it as well, David. And listen, we also have some news that I'm going to be sharing with momentarily, but it looks like we have Mike on the line. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm good, Russ. Just made it in from the rush hour but traffic on the M25, but I don't quite know why they call it rush hour. But anyway, apologies for last night. And I did listen back to the show, and I thought David lit it off a little bit, I have to say.
Okay, not a problem. Now, would you like to share your thoughts before we move on?
No, it's been covered, and anyone who follows me on Twitter, it's the defending. You know, I can hear about a glorious defeat and 27 shots and whatever it was, but in the end, you defend like that and defend with no organisation at corners. Someone has to take the blame, and that's going to be Kit. And one win in, what is it, 11-13, and he's going on today about how we've been playing well and just not having any luck. You win one in 13, it's got nothing to do with luck.
Very interesting point there. Great take there, Mike, and great way to start the show. And, guys, I have a bonus topic because I've been looking for information on Ross McCormack. Now, this isn't anything definitive. This just happened to be in Kit's Huddersfield preview. And Mike, I'm going to go back to you. I don't know if you had a chance to read the Huddersfield preview that's on the Fulham website, but in it, it states this. I'm going to read it and just get your thoughts. Fulham head north to John Smith Stadium on Saturday to take on a Huddersfield side who are winless in four, but Simons, who revealed Ross McCormack and Scott Parker are doubts for this trip. Now, I was aware that, obviously, Ross McCormack could be a doubt. I was not aware of Scott Parker. Mike, what are your thoughts about this if, say, both of these players cannot make this trip?
Well, I'm not surprised McCormack, because was he injured, wasn't he, the other day? Who knows? But he was, you know, he did go off limping, and so I'm not surprised he's not around. Parker, he's thrown himself around these last few games, and, you know, he's probably struggling to play three in a week. You know, as you get older, we all know the aches and pains become more. And so maybe, you know, another trip up the M1 is too much for him, really. And I noticed that there was no mention of Ruiz, but he had a bad back last week and didn't want to do a five-hour coach trip. So I wonder if he's going to be involved as well.
Oh, boy. I just don't know, Mike. It's a good point. You know, again, we probably won't get that information until tomorrow, unfortunately. You know, I've been scouring the internet looking for information on these players, and I just happened to stumble upon this right before we started the show that this was mentioned in the preview for the match. And you know what? If they're both not available, it's going to make things just that much tougher. David, what are your thoughts about these injuries for Fulham?
Well, it's normally a struggle to get Sarah Brooks to go north of Watford Gap, so I'm not sure about these highly played players as well, you know. But I think for me, Parker would be the biggest miss because he's really been trying to change our fortunes around lately. And as Mike said, he's been throwing himself in there, putting his body on the line. And, you know, he did actually go down on Wednesday night. There was a spell, I think, when he was down injured as well. But he recovered, if I'm remembering correctly. But obviously McCormack was the obvious one because he had to go off with it, and Parker managed to complete 90 minutes. So let's hope Parker at least is fit. We don't want to lose both of those. And it's just funny what Mike said at the start there, how, you know, Mike was very, very pro-Kit being manager, and he's now quite cutting. And I'm trying to be the voice of reason, saying, well, let's not be hasty here. And I didn't really ever want Kit to be the manager, and I just kind of was bullied into it by the pressure of everyone else. And it's funny just how our positions have changed. But, you know, I just don't want to see hasty decisions made, you know, as we've had done in the past, and making the wrong appointments.
Right.
So I'd rather stick with what we have until the end of the season, if we can last that long. Obviously, that's the if, I suppose, and a bad result tomorrow could make things change. I don't know. Maybe there could be a change in appointments. I doubt it, but, you know, let's see. I know Yanis probably would be very pro a change of appointment now, but I don't really want to see that kind of situation.
Okay, fair enough there, David. It is interesting how the two of you have changed your point of view on the whole Kit situation as the season's gone along. It's very interesting to follow, and again, we'll have to wait and see what happens. But you just mentioned Yanis, David, and Yanis is on the line with us. Yanis, how you doing, my friend?
Hello!
How you doing, Yanis?
I'm a lot better than I was on Wednesday night after what was, well, anyways. Just awful, wasn't it? Just awful. Just awful.
Well, listen, I asked Mike his thoughts on it, and I'm just curious your thoughts. You know, again, David and I went through all the stats and went through everything and all the missed opportunities. Mike brought up a good point, you know, again, defending. Let's just talk about defending for 2 seconds. They still gave up three goals. You know, again, you can't get past that. And one, again, off of a corner kick, no less. Again, we're dealing with that situation. So,
yeah.
I just want to get your thoughts about the match and everything since then. You know, again, I'm a glass half full guy. I'm trying to take the positives out of it, but we still lost the match.
Yeah, I mean, where to start? Okay, we've started off well. We've had chances. Ruiz has given the ball away, and you know, one thing's led to another. Although unmarked strike in the box, 1-0, and then we let the second one in. Then Stafleidis gets sent off, and then, you know, what, 26, 27 shots on net, and we lose 3-0 in the Leeds. For me, two things stood out for me. The first one was Stafleidis, and I'm not going to crap on Stafleidis here. The kid is 20 years of age. I didn't like the way Kit came out in the media and described him as petulant. You know what? The referee was frustrating on Wednesday night. Different players are going to react in different ways. I'm not going to condone what he did, but I am going to condemn the way Kit did it. If it was a problem in terms of the sending off, then deal with it in the changing room. He certainly didn't treat Amabieta that way when he got sent off. So I had a real problem with that as a manager. I have a problem with a manager doing that. You just keep it in-house, number one. And number two, you know, McCormack goes off, and we're three goals down. So what do? We look at the bench. We see Corley's there. We've got Pat Roberts there. See if we can throw something at them. What do? We bring on a defensive central midfielder. That, mate, what a load of bollocks. And I thought, hey, am I missing? This is so bad now. And the venom on the, you know, the Twitter and the Facebook sites said it all. I think tomorrow is his last throw of the dice. I think if we lose, Kerbishley's the manager starting Monday morning. I think with eight games to go, although Wigan's running is terrible, and it is terrible, I can't see where they're going to get points from. We are in such a funk right now that somehow, some way, something has to change. And you're not going to drop the players. I think you've got to change the manager, even with so few games left.
Okay, interesting take on Kit and the match there, Giannis. It's funny you mentioned Wigan, because I'm going to go through those last eight matches in Wigan when we get to the Coach Talk Controversy Roundtable. I have them at my fingertips, and I'm going to get your thoughts on their last eight matches, because, again, we have to talk about them, because Fulham are only 6 points away from the relegation zone, so we have to talk about it. And I have no problem going through it, because, again, they're still in danger. Until they're safe, we have to talk about this. All right, yeah. Guys, let's move on. Now let's get into Cotter's Talk Quick Shots. And, Mike, I'm going to start with you. You're a big fan of the young players. I want to get your thoughts on this. Emerson Hyman is back from injury and could play in the under-21s match tonight. What are your thoughts on his return? Do you think we could actually see him with the first team by the end of the season? And would you like to see him, or would you rather we wait until next season?
Well, it's definitely good to see him back after his injury, and I know he had a good tournament, but he's been a miss. He's been another option, but for us, you know, looking at the squad. But saying that, you know, Kit sort of started to sideline him almost immediately, and his appearances were quite fleeting, really, leading up to Christmas. And so maybe he felt he wasn't quite what he wanted. And then, of course, he brought in Fofana on loan. So are we going to see him again? Possibly, if we get enough points in the next few games where we can, give a couple of the youngsters a bit of a run out before the end of the season. But I don't see him being thrown in again, unless we get some major injuries, and and he's required. It's a pity, because he is one of the best passers we've got in the team now, and but he's still young, isn't he? He's still 18. I don't think he's 19 for the summer, maybe. And we'll be looking more for him to push on next season. I think he's going to need a couple of under 21 games. I think tonight's his first one. So good that he's back. But I'm not sure we're going to see anything of him, especially if Kit stays in charge for the rest of the season.
Okay, interesting take. Giannis, what are your thoughts of Emerson Hyman's return? What do you expect to see from him at the end of this? Do you expect that we might see him, or do you think it's going to wait until next season?
I don't know. I mean, it's been smacking a lot of Felix Bingo here. I don't know, because I'm not sure. You know, we're up at Huddersfield tomorrow. What is he going to be looking at? Is he going to go back to? Is he going to go diamond again? Is he going to try and play more defensive and try and get Huddersfield on the break? They're not particularly quick at the back. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure. The big thing for me from Wednesday night's game to tomorrow is how. It's not so much how the players will react to this, it's how the manager will. The players are obviously disappointed. I mean, you saw Scott Parker. Scott Parker couldn't have run any more than he did on Wednesday. I thought he was absolutely sensational. He gave it everything he had. And I'm not going to fault the players for effort Wednesday night. I really won't. Something was slightly amiss. We couldn't score, fine. But I think the players are going to be looking at Kit now and say, okay, give us a pep, give us something to think about. And this is where Kerbs has got to play a big role, I feel, with his experience. And I hope he's allowed to take more of a front role in terms of picking the team for the next few games for, but tomorrow is absolutely critical. Because I think that if we lose tomorrow, I think he's done.
Okay.
I think he has to be done, because there'll be seven games left. Because you know, weeks ago we were saying, well, we've got Derby, we've got Watford, you know, we've got Bournemouth. But now we're coming up against teams we should be beating, and we can't get anything off them either. So then you wonder where your next win's going to come from. And I'm really not sure. To be honest, I don't know where we're going to win next. Two wins in what, 15, 16?
It's not good, Giannis. I'm not going to disagree with you there.
It's not good. And you know what? I got pilloried because I said that the Derby game was a fluke. Well, on the basis of all the results that have gone around it, it has been a fluke, because we've reverted to type again. You know, five against Bournemouth. We did well to come back up at Hillsborough, but then Wednesday night Leeds. We shouldn't be losing 3-0 to Leeds. So let's see what happens tomorrow. But
okay,
I hope we get something.
All right, good stuff. No, listen, good stuff there, Giannis. David, how about you on the situation with Emerson Hyman?
I suppose you could say, actually, that Leeds was a bit of a fluke as well, because you'd think that if we'd put the ball in the back of the net first half, there would have been no coming back for Leeds. So, I don't know, I take Giannis' point as well, what he said about the derby, because it certainly was a very different performance and result compared to everything else around it. But I don't know, we were quite good up at Sheffield Wednesday to come back, and Leeds was definitely it was a fluke in the fact that we haven't been so dominant in a game for a very long time and not got points from it. So anyway, but Emerson Hyman, obviously, I guess it depends on the situation with the others, with LVC being out and Parker, of course, you know, whether that, you know, he may be required. Obviously, we have, you know, I think Tunnicliffe seems to be fairly in favour at the moment to play there. He's getting the nod ahead of Fofana. Hoogland, of course, will probably play in midfield from now on, because I don't think Ashley Richards can do anything wrong in kit size. He's going to be the Brian Ruiz of Martin Yeol, I think. He'll play regardless of anyone else. So we do have options in midfield, other options, but Hyman, obviously, you know, will be closer to playing if we have LVC out and if anyone else is out. And I think it's good, obviously, he's coming back, but don't want to rush him back into it. And especially, you know, for a young player in such a pressured situation. I know
right. He's
played, you know, with great maturity for his age when he's played, but still, I don't think you want to be putting too much on them. I mean, let Scott Parker take, you know, he's really raised his game, hasn't he, Scott Parker, I think. Not that he was playing badly before, but he's really kind of tried single-handedly to turn our fortunes around, it seems. And I did mention this actually last night, but by default, by my voting, he was man of the match. You didn't ask me that question, Russ, but
I didn't, because, you know, when you lose 3-0, David, it's difficult to talk about man of the match.
Well, apart from the goalkeeper for Leeds, Scott Parker was man of the match for me for the Fulham side. So, and he's been so vital, but Emerson Hyman has, you know, he has a slight difference to the others. I mean, Tunnicliffe's game is, as I said, it's a bit of a Sidwell. He runs around, he tries to get stuck in, he tries to do this, he tries to do that. But he's not really a pronounced passer. Fofana, likewise, he likes to run with the ball, really. Parker likes to run with the ball a bit more. He does the odd pass. But, you know, Hyman does offer something different, where he can play, he has a range of passing, which is, unlike anyone else. So I wouldn't rule out Hyman being used or being considered, because he offers something that others don't.
It's a good point. No, listen, it's a good point. He does, you know, his ability to pass. And, Mike, before we move on, I want to go back to you because, again, I value your judgment on the young players. And I want to just go a little bit deeper onto Emerson Hyman, because I see someone that could be a future central midfielder for Fulham Football Club. Among all of our, I guess you could say, young players, would you value him pretty high on the scale or middle of the pack?
Oh, no, he's definitely one of the, you know, probably top three prospects. And he's, he's a year earlier than the club expected to make an appearance, or possibly even 2 years. I mean, I saw him play last year or the last couple of years and felt he was too small, a bit slight, you know, lovely passing range. But then over last summer, he seemed to put on some inches and in some of the games, he's definitely not looked out of place, and he is one of the best passers we have. He keeps the ball rotating. And you would like to think in 2 years you've got a nice central midfield of Hyman and LVC, and that's what you need to be looking at really long term, isn't it, when you're building
right.
any kind of side. You know, if you're looking at getting promotion next year or even just consolidating in the year after, will those guys buy into it? If they're the ones who are going to be the central midfield core, you know, two youngsters. Derby have a couple of youngsters in their midfield, two or three.
Right, and
so
that's exactly how it's funny you bring up, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mike, because I was thinking of Derby County just as we're talking about this, because that's exactly how they did it.
Yeah, I mean, Hyman's probably, if we went up next year and the year after we'd be in the Prem, it's probably is a year too early for him there. So you've got to be looking for him maybe another two or three. I think LVC could possibly be all right in the Premier League in 2 years, and I'm not sure next year. But that's what you need to look at. If you're going to build a team, if it's all about youngsters and going forward and selling one every summer or every 6 months, but you really want a hardcore. So you look at all the youngsters we have, and those two stand out as that's who we should be looking to build a team around for next season. You know, another experience. If Parker isn't around,
yeah,
that's what I would want a new manager doing, or Kit, but I'm not convinced he's going to be there. Look at them and go, right, beginning of August, these two players, another experienced midfielder, those three are going to be, you know, pick two out of those three, and that's how we're going to use them through the year.
That's great, Mike, and that's actually, you know, like in the direction I hope that they do go, build the core around those two guys and maybe a couple of other players, but that's definitely a place to start. And you know, while you were talking about it, I was sorry that I did jump in, but I was just thinking of how Derby County were Fulham are right now, and then it took them bringing in some of the younger players, especially in the midfield, to start to move forward. And that's why I thought of Emerson Hyman. I believe he's got one more year left on his contract, and I really do hope Fulham up him soon. They need to do this. This is one player that I would highly recommend Fulham Football Club really looking to get a new contract in front of as soon as possible. That's just my recommendation. If anyone's listening, please do up Emerson Hyman, because I think he's a player that you could partially build your team around, like Mike, you mentioned, LVC, and there are a couple of other young players as well that you need to be thinking about for the future, building your future core. All right, guys, let's move on. I want to talk about a happier subject, and I want to get your thoughts on it, because I was really, you know, again, I was going back thinking about this on Wednesday. It was the fifth anniversary of the Juventus match, and what it meant to me. You know, again, I'm here in America, and obviously it means a little bit different for people that were actually there, or, you know, or wherever they watched it. I was just starting out as an editor for College's Confidential.SBNation at the time. And this was really the first big story I have was this match, and boy, did it really, it really affected me, and it still does 5 years later. And I'm going to start with you, David. I want you just to share your thoughts about this. You know, it is 5 years later. We could talk about how far Fulham have fallen since then, but I really want to concentrate just on your thoughts of that match and what it meant to you.
Oh, it was unbelievable, really, when you think about it and you look at Juventus now. And, you know, I think, you know, I said before on a previous show, it was maybe the perfect storm. Everything went right for us. We probably caught Juventus at relatively a low point in their recent history. Obviously, they were in the Europa League, not in the Champions League. And they had, remember, their third-choice goalkeeper, Uncle Fester, in goal. You remember that one? And they lost one of their star defenders to a dubious red card, let's say. And we got maybe a fortunate handball. But still, you know, the character and everything. And to start the match, obviously 3-1 down, and then after a couple of minutes to be 4-1 down, we just didn't know when we were beaten back then, you know. In Europe especially, over two legs, we could beat anyone, literally. That's how it seemed. Had the final been over two legs, we could have probably won that as well. We just seemed to have it, you know, the perfect scenario for that. You know, all these teams come and go, you know, different challenges. Shakhtar Donetsk, you know, the holders and favourites, literally. Juventus, the favourites after Shakhtar Donetsk were knocked out. Wolfsburg, the German champions, you know. Okay, perhaps, again, that season, you know, we caught them. They were nowhere near as good that season as they had been previously. But still, you know, the German league has been getting stronger and stronger. And yet we brushed them aside. Hamburg, you know, they had everything to play for. A home match for the final. And, you know, it was all surreal run of results and performances. But Juventus was the most surreal for me, really, because you just couldn't believe, really, you know, what happened there. To come back like that at home and, you know, and to win it like that in such style against such, you know, one of the most famous, I suppose, famous teams worldwide, Juventus, isn't it? Old historical team like them. great, great traditions. And, you know, it just, as I say, it was a perfect storm. Things did go our way, but still, you know, we just didn't know when we were beaten. And then you wind forward 5 years to the night and look at how we have fallen. You know, you mentioned it.
Yeah.
And that's how it was, you know. 5 years ago on Wednesday, we were beating Juventus. Coming from, you know, 4-1 down with about 85 minutes. And then we were losing to, no disrespect, you know, a mid-championship table, 3-0 team at home. So, you know, I can't imagine it. You know, I've been indoctrinated with Fulham the last couple of seasons, and I can't believe that we beat Juventus that night. I can't believe we got to a European final. It just doesn't seem that it could have really happened when you look at how we are now.
Yeah. It's crazy to think about how far we are from that point, David. But you mentioned something that stands out to me. It was the fight. It was the fight of that team. And it wasn't just one match. It was knocking off each one of these opponents, one after another, in different ways. And, you know, again, like you said, you know, people forget how good Wolfsburg were. They might have been a little bit down that year, but they were the champions from the year before. And you're talking about Juventus, and Hamburg was a good team at the time. And, you know, again, they gave Atletico Madrid everything that they could handle. And good point by you. If that was two legs, maybe Fulham actually win it because of the fight that that team had. And, Giannis, I want to go to you because, again, I don't think I've ever talked to you about this match. I want to get your thoughts on it, and also what we're talking about, the fight of the team, because that's the difference between that team back then to, unfortunately, the downfall. You know, the downfall, you know, I'm not saying that the players that came after the Europa League team didn't have fight in them, but for some reason, that group, that team had so much fight in them.
Yeah, before I just tiddle on, I'm going to, unfortunately, gonna have to nip at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
Just a little bit early. They'll actually pick my mum up from work. But, you know, you talk about the 5 years ago. That, I mean, David's right. That was part of the perfect storm. And I sometimes pinch myself to think that we beat the likes of, you know, Wolfsburg and Shakhtar and Hamburg and Juventus. That Juventus night was just something that it was fairy tale stuff. I think, you know, it's one thing that we can look back on as Fulham fans and say, wow, that was just such a fairy tale run for us. And for us to do that well and to get to the final, and really, let's be honest, it was the last minute of extra time that did it, and it was an own goal of that, was a magnificent run. But when I think of where we are now and just trying to trace the last few years, you know, when we lost Roy Hodgson, that was a huge, I mean, of course, he was a huge part of that run. But I think maybe as bigger loss for our club was when we lost Ray Lewington. Because
We talked about that.
He's been such a huge part of the club, and it seemed all of a sudden we seemed to lose our balance when he left. And Roy did the right thing by taking him. Obviously, they're a tremendous team working together. In terms of coaching, we've not really been able to replace Louis. And you know, you can't buy experience, especially experience of the, you know, the club from top to bottom, whether it's the little kiddies or it's, you know, the academy or it's, the, you know, the under 21, under 18s, whatever it's going to be. And right now, although Kit is a Fulham boy per se, he does lack the experience. And you compare it to 5 years ago, you know, you could look at Roy Hodgson and say, well, this is a guy that's won trophies around Europe. He's coached national teams. He has the respect of most, if not all, coaches around Europe. And then you look at Kit Simons, who, you know, with all due respect, who is he? And that's why, for the Huddersfield game tomorrow, I mean, even looking from that 5 years on, I think that if we don't win tomorrow, I think Kerbs comes in, because I think there's something to be said that when you're looking at a manager's dugout, and you know, and you see someone with respect, and it's a bit of a Philip, if only off the ball. It's a bit like Mourinho. You know, you look at Mourinho and you think, oh, God, you know, what are we going to get off him? Even though he's not playing, right, he's such an integral part to the team. And Hodgson was 5 years ago. He had them playing smart footy. We were very well organised. We didn't concede many goals. Everybody was on the same page. And when we got players off the bench, we didn't seem to miss a beat.
Now, good stuff there, Giannis. Very, very good. I'm glad that you brought up Ray Lewington. We've talked about him before. And he is a miss, and we just don't mention it as much as we really should. That was a pivotal person in Fulham Football Club. And, yes, we lost Roy Hodgson, but just, you know, again, I'm not going to say just as big a loss because, obviously, Roy was the manager, but a significant loss was losing his partner there in Ray Lowington, and that, you know, again, partner in football, Ray Lowington really always by him, and then to lose him is just, you know, again, I don't think they've ever have been able to find someone to replace Ray Lowington. I'm glad that you brought that up, Giannis. And when you have to drop off, just drop off, my friend. No worries there, by the way.
I will say my goodbyes.
Okay. Are you dropping off now?
No. I'll leave at 1. 2 o'clock.
Rather. Okay. Okay. Not a problem. Mike, over to you, because, again, I shouldn't assume, but I'm going to assume you were there, and I want to get your thoughts on the Juventus match 5 years ago.
Yeah, I was there. Can I just correct? Or just get the timeline right on Lewington.
Sure.
He never left in 2010 because Roy went to Liverpool and we wouldn't let him go. And Hughes demoted him when he brought in all his coaches.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, and he left in 2012. So I just wanted to clarify that in case anyone listening think he left in 2010. So Ray was around, but he was undervalued and underused by the two managers who came in after Roy. So,
that's a good point. That's a good point there, Mike. Go ahead.
Just wanted to clarify that. But, yeah, I was there on that night, and me and my old man at the game the other day, we were talking about it, and my view on it is that if you look at a club, its history, you know, it gets to finals, it becomes 91st in the league at Torquay, where we lost. I was at that game, and I feel, despite us being through a couple of finals, the European final and the FA Cup, and finishing seventh, this was the highest point the club ever reached, press-wise, crowd-wise, result-wise. You know, I mean, it was when we were stuck on a TV channel, ITV4, showing this game. The press weren't really interested in us, but the next day we're splashed everywhere. You have Alex Ferguson saying how well we did getting that result, and I do see it as the highest point for Fulham Football Club in its history, really. It was a great night. I think the crowd was brilliant. It played its part. People forget that it was Baird as well in midfield that day instead of Murphy. He had a great performance, and all capped off with that goal by Mr. Dempsey. And, it doesn't get any better than that, does it? I mean, after speaking to my old man the other day, he said he watched the whole game recently, and it's just a brilliant game to watch every minute of it. He did it to cheer himself up, and I might have to do that soon as well. But
I would highly recommend that, Mike. Seriously, go ahead and do that. I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, I've never been able to watch the final again, so but I might watch that game. So it was a great night. All, you know, perfect storms being used, and for the whole tournament. I think we've said it in other shows as well, but that was it. That was the pinnacle for me, that game. And I wouldn't say it was downhill, because obviously we got to the final, but now you look 5 years later and, you know, bad decisions and, bad luck at times. But really, it's the team reached its peak that season. It was always going to have to change. It just didn't change quick enough, really. You know, we allowed a few players to get too old and not replace them quick enough. And I think we're in the position we're in now because work wasn't done in the preceding two, in the post couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, well, listen, we talked about that, Mike. And listen, thank you for sending me that email, by the way. I haven't had a chance, Roy, to thank you, because you went into serious detail, and I appreciate you really sharing that with me, because, again, we were talking about the decline of Fulham Football Club on Monday, and you really went into a detailed analysis of it, and it was fantastic. So thank you, Mike, for sharing that and sharing your thoughts, all three of you. I, honestly, on Wednesday, I was – I was, you know, just going back, just thinking about it and trying not to think about how far we have fallen, because we have plenty of time for that. But I just wanted to really just think about that. And I would recommend, if you can, to watch that match. You watch it from the very beginning. You know how it's going to turn out, but it's definitely going to put a smile on your face. And when you see that goal go in so early by Trezeguet, and all the work that had to be done, and then David goes back to talk about the fight. That's what I think David's talking about when you talk about fight. When you're down, as far down as Fulmer, and yes, it was a perfect storm. Things had to happen. Things had to go our way. But boy, did they. But they also created their own luck, their own opportunities. And they deserve to win that. And Clint Dempsey finished it off, but that was a complete team effort. And goodbye you, Mike, for mentioning Chris Baird. One of my favorite Fulham players, I will say. Chris Baird is one of my favorite players. He might not be the most skillful Fulham player, but someone that I will always appreciate just because he does his job. He can do it in multiple – he did it in multiple positions and just worked his behind off. And that's someone that I'll always appreciate is Chris Baird. All right, let's move on. And let's go into the College Talk Controversy Roundtable. And again, guys, I put up two topics, one fun one and one, I guess you could say, more interesting or serious one. And let's start with a fun one because, again, I'm trying to go through the starting 11, and then we're going to have your all-time Fulham starting 11 that you've seen in a Fulham shirt. But let's now switch over to right back. And, David, I'm going to start with you, and then I'll get, after we go around the room here, then I'll go to the Fulham supporters. But who has been the best right back you've seen wear a Fulham shirt? We did left back. That was a little bit difficult. Is right back much easier?
Only one name is springing to mind for me at the moment, and that is Steve Finnan. He came to us, you know, a lower level. He moved up with us, and he left us and went on to bigger things. And I thought he was a great player, both defensively and attack-wise. He was obviously part, again, of some happy times, our promotions to the Premier League, etc. And I just, no one else is standing out and you know, and really, like, coming up to that. So, you know, I can't think of anyone else who would get close to Steve Finnan. If I've forgotten someone,
and
please remind me, Yanis and Mike, and I will apologise.
Okay. Yanis, I'm going to go to you. Who is it for you?
In terms of seeing live, it would actually be Steve Finnan. But if it's in terms of all time, in terms of watching live and video, to me it's George Cohen, because
okay.
I mean, 13 years with Fulham, World Cup winner, spent his whole career with our club, Fulham legend, and if you watch him on video, very very rarely got beaten, as solid and as tough as they came. I know he ended his Fulham career in 1969. But in the you know, the hustle and bustle and physicality of the 1970s, he would have been more than able to stand up to, you know, all the Norman Hunters and what have you that came in through the ranks. He was the best. Finnan was a superb right back, and I was very sorry when we sold him to Liverpool. But in terms of I've ever seen in all forms, to me it's George Cohen.
Okay, fantastic, good stuff there, Yanis. All right, Mike, how about you?
Well, I was going to mention Cohen. I mean, I never ever saw him play, but, you know, he's an obvious choice as a sort of historic figure. But I have to agree with the other two that Finnan, over all the years I've been going, he's the one who stands out. I mean, he joined us as a midfielder. He played left-back, right-back, up front, in midfield, all over the place. But eventually settled down and had one of the best partnerships I ever saw down the right with Goldbeck. And so it would be Finnan, but there's quite a few. I mean, it's my position, I suppose. I played that position most of my footballing life, and when I first started going, there was Ray Evans at right back, and he was one of the reasons I went to my next game because he played so well. But then we've had Jeff Hopkins, Paul Parker, Simon Morgan, Duncan Jupp,
yeah,
Boltsy. You know, I mean, it's there's a lot of players there. Not all the best players in the world, but you know, a good solid run over all those years. We've had some decent players. We've had some very poor ones as well. But yeah, Finnan wins it easily, really.
Okay, very good. And guys, we've got a decent amount of comments on this, so I'm just going to read through them and then get your thoughts on it, and then we'll move on. James Crashaw said Steve Finnan. Johnny Smith said John Pansel. Ben Reed said someone has to give John Pansel a mention, if only for those victory laps he'd do it at the Cottage. What a character. Liam Burns said Steve Finnan. Michael Dowling, George Cohen. Steve Powell, no-brainer, the great George Cohen. Sanke Gorgo, Steve Finnan. Reg Hollis, George Cohen, Steve Finnan, and Kevin Locke, maybe also Ray Evans. Nick Lawrence, Steve Finnan, then John Cutbush, and then Morris Volz. Let's see, Colm Bugler, Frederick Storer, and Gary Peters. Tungley Furmancheek, yes. John Mason,
yeah.
Cohen, obviously, but Finnan was very good, and oh no, John Pansel was great fun and very enthusiastic. Prashad Patel, Paul Parker, Danny Heath, Duncan Jupp, Kevin James, Steve Finnan, Roger Warren, George Cohen, Lee Grimson, Paul Parker in my era, Alex Lowy, in my lifetime, Steve Finnan, of all time, George Cohen, Ian Fox, George Cohen, Jack Stanley, Steve Finnan, Barbara Hounsom, George Cohen from the good old days of football when players didn't dive. Lee Singleton, Steve Finnan, Steve Whittier, Steve Finnan, my era. David Allen, Paul Parker, Roger Lewis, there is only one contestant, George Cohen, Colin York, George Cohen, one of the greatest right backs of all time. Bill Sheen, let's see, George Cohen, Keith Tanner, Steve Finnan, and finally, Barry Porter has George Cohen, no question, no doubt. Giannis, what are your thoughts about what the Fulham supporters had to say about the best right back?
Well, I almost jumped off a cliff because of the mention of Frederick Storer. my God, he really ranks amongst the worst. I keep thinking Gavin Nebling, but we've not got the centre backs yet. But I've no complaints. I mean, Steve Finnan was a tremendous player for us. And again, I agree with the fans. You know, it's in our life in terms of who they've seen live. But I still stick by my thing about George Cohen. He was a player that was playing on real crappy pitches. I mean, this was part of my angst and my annoyance at the thing about Brian Ruiz last week. You know, I mean, Cohen would turn around and say, I don't care if it's a mud bath. You just play, right? You play when you play. And the fields, as we know, didn't have undersoil heating in the 60s or even 70s. So, you know, anyone that can win a World Cup as the best right back in England, to me, has to get my vote. And again, the best thing about him is he was a one club man. 13 years, which is tremendous.
Okay. No, good stuff there, Giannis. And Mike, what are your thoughts about what the Fulham supporters had to share about right back?
Well, it certainly sounded as if Finnan won with the most votes. But yeah, I mean, it's very much who you saw, you know, live and who you first saw sometimes, you know, because you base that, everyone who comes afterwards, on that sort of standard, you know, are they better, are they worse? So, I mean, Pansel, as soon as you mentioned I forgot him, but he wasn't really that good. It was a drilled team and he won over fans because he ran around the pitch clapping. But,
right.
He made probably as many mistakes as Stafalidis makes. You know, but he got away with it because he was a fan's favourite and part of a really good team. But he was nowhere, you know, he wouldn't be in the top 10, top 20 for me.
No, I hear you on that, Mike. I couldn't agree with you more, you know, again. But you know, hey, fans are entitled to share their opinions on that. David, what are your thoughts quickly, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, well, obviously, I didn't include Cohen because I never saw him play, but I think it's pretty suffice to say from what he achieved in his career and, you know, and winning a World Cup final that he probably was the best right back, but say didn't get to see him. So Finnan was the one I saw in my lifetime. I didn't actually count Parker because, believe it or not, Paul Parker for me stands out more as a centre defender. I know he started as a fullback, but despite being only about 5'5", he actually ended up being a great centre defender. So he, you know, I think of him more from that position, and that was ultimately, he even played for England in that position as one of a back three, I think. I did notice there's one error. Someone mentioned Kevin Locke. Kevin Locke never played right back. He was a left back, of course. We could have also included Les Strong, because Les Strong did play quite a lot of right back as well as left back, but he already got our vote last time at left back. So I think, you know, we can't win both left back and right back, Les Strong. That would be that would probably be a bit unfair. Jeff Hopkins wasn't a bad player, but again, Jeff Hopkins ended up playing a centre half or centre back, just like Paul Parker as well. So I think, you know, Finnan is the standout one, because he's, in recent times that everyone's seen, he's the one that stands out. I'm not sure about Duncan Jupp either. Less said about him, probably the better, really.
Okay, David. No, good stuff, good stuff. And I'm really enjoying going through this and letting everyone share their thoughts on the different positions. We're going to do center back next, and that should be interesting. And I look forward to doing that eventually. Like I said, at the end of the season, we will do all-time starting 11 that you've seen in a Fulham shirt, and that should be fun. And, you know, again, it's good to have a couple fun subjects to look back and get your thoughts on, and that's why I'm glad that we're doing this. But now let's go on to, I guess you could say, a more serious discussion topic. And, Mike, I'm going to start with you. I put this on the College Talk Facebook page as well. Would you like to see Fulham try to sign any of the players on loan with the team after the season ends? And if so, which players?
Okay, so I'll start with Fofana. I mean, I don't think there's zero chance of purchasing him, but I suppose you could go back and ask for a season-long loan again, or, you know, first season. And he might be an option, but I think, you know, with our younger midfielders and what we were talking about earlier, I think we have to look at slightly more experienced midfielder, someone with some legs, but not as young as Fofana, someone with a bit of experience. So not for Fofana, no, I wouldn't go for him. Ashley Richards, I'd send him back this evening, so I'm not watching. Turner, we've seen two games. One, his debut, you know, was solid and spectacular. And the other day, I wasn't overly impressed. So I'm not sure with him, to be perfectly honest. He has the pedigree, has the experience. Is he good enough? I don't know yet. You know, not from the two games I've seen. Stafalidis is a difficult one. He is only 20, 21. He does show, he has something about him. And the question is, can we get it out of him, and how much would that cost? And I would say,
good point.
If they said to us, you can have him for $1.5 million, possibly two, then I might consider it, because I do think he is someone, if we got him on a 3 or 4 year contract, we could offload and get our money back at least. Because, I, you know, he's been picked for the Greece team, the squad today as well. So, he could be worth a gamble. But I know the club really, really do rate Kavanagh, and they want him to be the main man at left back. And so the question is, you know, who are they going to go for next year at left back, really?
And that's a great question. And that's while you were talking again, and you know, you're kind of reading my mind, because I'm thinking, well, what about Sean Kavanagh if they decided to actually buy Kostas Stafalidis? Because I remember you mentioning several times that the club is high on Sean Kavanagh. So very interesting. Giannis, I'm going to go to you. I know you have some interesting views on this subject in the past, so I'm curious your thoughts about the loanees, and would you want to sign any of them if you could?
Where do we begin? Richards, get in your car and take the M4 down. You know where to turn off. We've got Fofana. No, thank you. Stafalidis, I would resign, and I'd re-sign him in a heartbeat, because he is only 20. He's a young kid. And he's developing. It takes years and years to become a really solid defender. I think he needs a fair amount of experience playing with him. Remember, he's playing in front of a fairly inexperienced goalkeeper as well. And that's why I was really pissed off with Kit the other night. Because it's not like it's a 30-year-old evergreen defender that you're slagging off in the media. You're doing it to a 20-year-old kid who's in a new country speaking a foreign language, but you decide to pillory him over the media. To me, that's classless. I don't like it. Kit won't be here next year, And if we do re-sign, I agree with Mike, if you get him at a reasonable deal, you can sell him on down the line. But I actually happen to think he'll be a very good fullback. Michael Turner is someone I would re-sign because I've always liked him. I was very, very pleased when he got him, as a loanee. And he's the sort of player with a close season and a full season that can help the younger players because he has the experience of playing in the Premier League. He has the experience of playing in the Championship. And you do need that old head at the back. So Turner's somebody I would look at Norwich to see if we could get him. So for the loanees we have, unless I've missed somebody, I would keep Stafflidis and Turner. And Richards and Fofana, I would buy them train tickets.
Okay, good stuff there, Giannis. I like your analysis on that. Very, very good analysis by the two of you on that. And I'm sure David won't let me down on his analysis. So, David, what are your thoughts?
I'm with Mike on Richards. I still don't know why we got him in the first place, really. I've seen absolutely nothing from him at all to suggest why he's better than Grimmer or even Hoogland for that matter. And you know, the other night he just dawdled with the play, didn't put early balls in. He made Sean Kavanagh look tough in the tackle on a couple of occasions. so I know Richards can go straight away. Stafflidis, you know, after the other night, you know, sorry, Giannis, I know you like him, but I'm starting to think that he can go as well, really, because he just got easily beaten on the first goal and he's got himself sent off. And I don't know, his delivery hasn't been very good. That was the thing that really disappoints me, not even his defending, his delivery. Pre-season, we saw him rifling the ball in from, you know, scoring goals, hitting bullets. He seems to have forgot how to hit a ball hard. He hasn't been beating the first man with crosses and stuff, and we got a few like that. So, Stafflidis, you know, if the price is right, maybe, and someone can bring him on, yes, but otherwise, I wouldn't pay a lot of money for him. Turner, too early to say, really. I have to say, in previous clubs, I wasn't a big fan of him. I did think he was potentially in the Premier League a weak link, but maybe at this level he can do a job. But then he's the wrong side of 30, so I wouldn't go overboard either. Fofana, I don't think we're ever going to get him. Yes, we might get another loan, but I don't think we can really build our plans around him. So I think long term we'll have to look elsewhere.
Okay. No, good stuff by the three of you on this. I'm just going to read quickly. I just want to get to, you know, what the Fulham supporters had to say. We had a few comments on that, and I will share that with you momentarily. Of course, I ended up going off of that, and then now I got to go back on it. And David, you know, while I look for the Stafflidis, you know, here's my only disagreement with you. I mean, at times during the season, later on, I would say since the beginning of this year, this calendar year, his crossing's been better, though, David.
I don't know. I'm not sure. He's failed to beat the first man, or his crossing has been reckless. There's times when he just completely overhit it as well. I have been disappointed with his delivery. I know he's in the team as a defender first, but I don't know. Yeah. I just saw something pre-season, perhaps against, you know, weaker opposition, where I thought that he was actually going to be much more of a force going forward. And we need that in this, you know, diamond system they keep persisting with. You need the fullbacks to be a force going forward. Unfortunately,
yeah,
Ashley Richards is nothing like that. So, you know, you need it. At least you need one of the fullbacks to be able to get forward and get balls into the box, especially when you're relying on a system with someone like Matt Smith there. So,
okay,
you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, he's not going to play tomorrow. It'll be interesting to see what the options are. I would imagine Amad Bieto will come in. But I just don't know about Stafflidis. I'm very much in two minds still.
Okay. So you're just not sold at this point. Maybe these last eight games he can sell you. But we'll see what happens. All right, I'm going to share the thoughts of the Fulham supporters. Dean Rozier said, Richards is a good squad player, and obviously Turner is experienced at this level. None of the rest are good enough, though. Okay, Lars Anderson says, who wants to play in League One? That's all he had to say. Sonica Gorgo said, yes, Turner and Richards wouldn't be too bad. Okay, Roger Lewis said, Turner and Stafflidis are the only ones I would want to keep. Ollie Minna said, despite the red card, I'd still sign Stafflidis. And Gerard Sabate Navarro said, Stafflidis, Richards, Turner, and Fofana, they need to play as a team. That's all he said. I don't really understand what he was trying to get at, but that's basically it from the foam supporters. All right, guys, let's move on. And, Giannis, I'm gonna start with you because I know that you have to drop off in a few minutes. I have one other subject I want to go through in the College Talk Controversy Roundtable before we preview this match. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through Wiggins' matches, and I just want to ask you, this is a two-fold discussion. One, how many matches do you think Wiggins are going to win, and how many points and matches do you think Fulham need to win so they don't get relegated? So this is two-fold. I'm going to give you their last eight matches. Starting with tomorrow, they are home against Bolton. Then they're on the road against Middlesbrough. Then they are home against Derby County. They're away to Fulham. Then they're away to Millwall. Then they're home against Brighton. They are home against Wolves. And finally, they are away at Brentford. So how many matches do you see them realistically winning? How many points out of all that? And how many do you think Fulham need to win so they don't get relegated?
I can see seven points out of that lot. I think Bolton's a possibility, Millwall's a possibility. Unfortunately, I think we're a possibility because that could turn out to be a real 12-pointer. I think we need two wins.
Two wins.
The problem, if we can win tomorrow, that takes an enormous amount of pressure off us. But we have to, as long as we're not winning, it's still going to give Wigan hope. And the thing that worries me is that they've got some very difficult games. But you remember Cup 2-3 years ago when they were wallowing near the bottom of the Premier League and
that's
they put these ridiculous results like going up to the Emirates and beating Arsenal. So anything can happen. And remember, there's a lot of pressure on the teams like Middlesbrough top, and they want to be one of the top two to go through automatically. But, every one of these teams is liable to slip. So I'm going to say 7 points. I think two wins should do it. I hope.
Okay. Good stuff, Giannis. And listen, thank you again for joining us today. I know that you got to drop off the line, and you are great as always, my friend.
Thank you, mateys, and I'll be back on Sunday.
Okay, looking forward to it there, Giannis.
All right.
Cheers, Giannis.
Bye.
Okay. And that was Giannis Janaeus. Unfortunately, Giannis had to leave, but we got an hour with Giannis, and that was great as always. All right, David, over to you. I gave you the matches for Wigan. So how many points do you think that they're actually going to get out of it, and how many victories do you think Fulham need to be safe?
Can you just remind me the fixtures again? Sorry, I was in the middle
not a problem. I'll go through them again. They are home tomorrow against Bolton. Then they are away to Middlesbrough. Then they are home against Derby. They then are away to Fulham and away to Millwall. Then they are home against Brighton, then they are home against Wolves, then they end up away against Brentford.
Well, when you look at, I suppose, the form and logic, you would think that maybe they can get something against Bolton. They could easily get something at Millwall. They could get something like, as Giannis said, the way we've been going. Who knows what's happening with Derby at the moment as well. Derby have really fallen to pieces. So they could even get something there. So I think that's that'd be five wins, but I don't think that's likely. You'd probably say three wins out of that. So at that stage, we need to win two, I suppose, don't we?
I keep going back to the minute Giannis said that, I was thinking two, or possibly three. That's why I wanted to ask our part of this. So you think two, David?
No, I'm saying three for them, yeah. Three for them.
No, three for them and two for us.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. Mike, over to you. We've talked about this, again, with it being Millwall, but you, and I have to give you credit, you said that you thought the bigger threat was Wigan, and you turned out to be right, so I want to give you all the credit in the world for that. But let's talk about this again. We're a little further along with eight matches left. How many matches out of the eight that I just read do you think realistically Wigan are going to win, or just points in general, and how many points do Fulham need to do, or just victories?
Okay, well, we'll start with Wigan, and I mean, their form seems to be, you know, win one, lose one, win one, lose one. So, I mean, with eight games, you could argue 4 wins is what they probably could get, and it's the same games as everyone else has said, you know, Bolton at home, Millwall away, Brighton at home should be a target for them as well, and then, of course, us away. You know, let's be honest here. So, you know, that's 4 games that they should be targeting to get 12 points. To take them to 46, we're stuck on 40, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we need to get 2 wins or a draw, so 2 wins and a draw to beat that. And you know, you lose to them, that leaves us with 7 games to try and find three wins from. And so really, it all you can look at all their results, you can look at our results, but really, if we beat them, and you know. They need, out of the other 7 games, they will need to win 3 or 4 of those. So it's our game. Our game is the key game. If we can pick up a win between now and that one, then the pressure will be really on them if they do get a result against Bolton tomorrow, pick anything up against Middlesbrough and Derby. That is such a crunch game for us.
yes.
It's massive because, you know, it's a 6-point swing, isn't it? You know, and that's what you've got to look at. So it really just comes down to that. But realistically, yeah, I mean, they can look at 3 or 4 wins from those last 8. I don't see them getting anything at Brentford. Wolves at home, possibly. Depends what Wolves team turns up. Derby will get out of their slump. They're having a nervous time at the moment, but they will get some results. And Borough away, I don't see them getting anything there.
Okay.
I still think we need 49. We need 3 wins and a draw from the last few games to guarantee staying up.
Okay, and it's funny because again, I was thinking, you know, as we're going through this, 2 or 3 wins, and you're going on the high side, and I understand why, because again, this could end up being very close and very scary, it's crazy, Mike, but you're right. It really does come down to Wigan versus Fulham in that match at Craven Cottage. That could really tell the tale, because if, you know, again, Fulham could do something before that to take the pressure off. Like you said, if for some reason we do get a victory tomorrow, that certainly takes the pressure off, or against Brentford. And honestly, Fulham really, you know, again, they should be targeting that Brentford match, you know, partially because of the derby of it. But again, you know, that's a match that they should be thinking that they could win. But that's a step further along, but I agree with you. I think it does. I think that Wigan Fulham match is really the one that's really going to decide this. And I hope they decide it beforehand. You know, maybe Fulham actually decide it beforehand. But it really could come down to that. Very good point by you, Mike. So you're looking more at the high end. Of Fulham need 9 points plus maybe a draw, and David's looking at 2 wins. So again, it's a difference of maybe 3 or 4 points, but I see where both of you are going on that. All right, guys.
We could get to a point if somehow we win tomorrow and beat Brentford and win the game after that, and they lose their 3 games, you know, they would have to win all their last games and we'd have to lose them all. You know, we'd be on 49, and that's the most they could get. So it could be argued if Millwall don't pick any points up, that come that home game, we're going to have the last 4 games of the season. We won't have anything to worry about. But that's the very optimistic me.
well, honestly, Mike, I want to see that happen. But I hear what you're saying. It could go that way, and that's what we have to hope for. But that's an optimistic view at this point based on our form. You know, again, I understand the pessimistic view here as well. You know, we're going to have to grind this out to the very end. And I just hope that it goes the way that you just mentioned, that those last 4 matches don't really mean much. We can just get as many points as we need, and we can take this off the table, because the last thing any of us want is this to go down to the very end. We don't want that, and I don't want that. You don't want that. I'm sure David doesn't want that. We want this taken off the table. So hopefully Fulham can finally get some victories and take it off the table, and that would be very nice, and put all the pressure onto Wigan. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's preview this match tomorrow, and It's going to be very interesting. Huddersfield Town, you know, again, they're not in the greatest of forms, but as I mentioned earlier in the show, Fulham are dealing with a couple of injuries, but they also have a suspension that they're dealing with, so maybe it offsets it a little bit. But let's go through this, and then I'll get your thoughts on Huddersfield Town. They are currently 17th. They've won 11, which is the same amount that Fulham have won. They have 11 draws, 16 losses. They've scored 48. They've given up 65 goals. They have a goal differential of minus 17. They're on 44 points. Now, in comparison to Fulham, it's obviously very similar. You're going to see this. Fulham have 11 victories. They have 7 draws. So the point differential is just about the draws. Fulham have 20 losses. Fulham have also scored 48. Fulham have given up 3 more goals at 68 for minus 20. And we're on 40 points. So as you can see, we are pretty similar to Huddersfield Town. And again, we have 4 points from them, but we basically have had a similar type of season, except that they've gotten more draws. In their last 6, they have 1 victory, 2 draws, 3 losses. They are coming off of 2 draws. Last Saturday, they drew 1-1 away to Birmingham. And on Tuesday, they drew 2-2 at home with Norwich City. They've, you know, again, I went back to several of their matches, and David, you'll like this. A few of their matches, they played the 3-5-2. A couple of their matches, they played 4-3-3. So they are adept to changing the formation, and their, you know, their leading scorer currently is Naki Wells, and he might return. He's been dealing with an injury. He's been out for several weeks, but he might return. But James Vaughn, another one of their strikers, is suspended for this match. And stupidly, if you've seen the highlights, he got a second yellow card at the very end, and ended up getting a red card, and then ended up forcing the draw because again, Norwich City scored a goal after he was sent off. So again, James Vaughn is suspended for this match. So I just thought I'd mention that. All right, David, I'm gonna start with you. What are your thoughts on Huddersfield Town coming into this match? You saw them at Craven Card, so I want to get your thoughts on them.
I think it's probably fair to say that the scoreline, in a way, it did flatter us a little bit. I think although we finished the match off resounding side stride, it was really, until Ross McCormack blasted that one in, it was probably a bit more touch and go, wasn't it, if I remember rightly. And, of course, they've got the guy who played for Blackpool up front, haven't they, who scored against us, who was quite a handful, if I remember. He's a big guy. So, again, we have to worry about our central defence and our vulnerability on crosses and corners because they've got a big target man, like a lot of teams seem to have in the Championship. And it's traditionally, it was always a hard place to go, Huddersfield. I remember going there to the old Leeds Road Stadium as a teenager. And they used to be, and Mike's been there, members as well, they didn't used to have a very big crowd at home, but they used to make an awful lot of noise in those days. You used to wonder where the noise came from. It's really quite, you know, a fervent home crowd there. So I don't know what the new stadium's like or the acoustics, but I would imagine it's sort of a tough place to go, Huddersfield. It's not in the spine of the West or the East Coast sort of main lines or main routes, whereas, you know, from London you can travel up by fast train or by motorway on the east or the west side of the country. But to get to Huddersfield, you've got to kind of cut across a bit. So it's a difficult journey to go to, and if the players are going by coach or even by train, you know, maybe it's not as relaxing as some trips are. So it kind of, these things tend to work in the home side's favour as well. So I think Huddersfield will be big and strong tomorrow and robust. And they'll be sensing, obviously, that they can get 3 points because they saw how vulnerable we can be even when we play apparently well.
No, good stuff there, David. All right, really, really good stuff. Mike, over to you. What are your thoughts about Huddersfield Town heading into this match?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a look at their form, and you know, they've got results against teams where, you know, we failed against, and then they've beaten teams we should have, you know, Millwall, they've got a result against. So they're very much an up-and-down team. If you look at one of those graphs which show their positions, they've never been higher than 11th or 12th. It looks like the outs as well, because they win a game, lose a game, win a game, lose a game. So So they're, you know, and they're in the same division that they're 17th. They finished last season in 17th. So, you know, that is their natural sort of lower mid-table championship side. You know, they can beat a team on a good day, and on another day they'll probably get fresh. But the interesting thing is they've lit in the same number of goals as us. And
yeah.
they lit in 65 last year as well. So you always think, you know, two teams, they can't defend. It's going to be a goal fest, which probably means it's going to be a 0-0 or 1-0 tomorrow. And Huddersfield's a nice stadium. It's a nice stadium. It's one of those newer ones. Or it's not as new now, but it's not intimidating. I'm pretty sure it's certainly better than the rickety old Sheffield Wednesday Stadium we went to last week, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, the players should enjoy playing there, and they're a team, who knows with us really, but we shouldn't be scared of going, whatever, you know, even if we're missing McCormick and that, they're a fragile team just like us, and it's whoever scores first tomorrow will win. Let me ask you a question, Mike.
You were just talking about Sheffield Wednesday. Do you think Sheffield Wednesday is a cut above Huddersfield Town?
Not really. I think they're just they're just the same in a way.
They're about the same, right?
Powell's a good, decent manager. He gets the teams sort of playing a certain way, but they're letting a lot of goals in their defeats. So obviously they're like us. They're a bit fragile if they go behind, and they won't let in one. They're letting three and four, and that's what we've got to look at. We have to score first tomorrow. We let too many goals in, you know, without scoring first, and we saw the other day, you know, 30 minutes in, we've had chances, and the crowd, and I suspect the players are thinking the same, you know, it's not our night, and, you know, if they score, and you saw it, heads go down, the crowd's confidence goes. That is all about the first goal tomorrow. But Huddersfield, yeah, we should be okay. We should be beating
okay.
these teams.
Okay, you know, and it's funny that you said it that way, because I was thinking it's similar. The reason why I was asking you if Sheffield Wednesday was a cut above, because I felt that Fulham, you know, again, should have possibly done better, you know, against Sheffield Wednesday. That's why I'm thinking, even if McCormick can't play, I think that we should be fancying our chances to get something from this match, and, you know, not thinking that, oh, you know, we're playing Huddersfield Town. I think it's fairly even. And before I move on, David, the player you were mentioning before, you couldn't think of his name. I just looked it up. It's Ishmael Miller. That's the striker that played with Blackpool, now plays for Huddersfield Town. So just thought I'd mention that. David, over to you. Do you know anything about the ref for this match? You are our expert when it comes to the ref.
Well, I didn't. I had to look it up because, again, it was someone that I hadn't heard of before. And he's the ref. I don't know if you saw this. There was a controversy. The only thing I could find, he sent off a player, I think it was from Doncaster early in the season, for leaving the pitch too slowly. Did you see that story?
No.
Well, the guy had already had a yellow card, and he was being substituted. And because he left the pitch slowly, the ref sent him off, and they couldn't make the substitution. So it was a slightly quirky news story, and I'm just sorry. The reason I'm doing this is because I forgot his name, so I was just having to go back into my where I've made
That's
my
okay,
notes, because it's not someone I remember. So his name was, where is it? Richard Clark. There we go. His name is. So I'd never heard of him before until I googled it up, and it say he sent off someone. I think it was Doncaster. Can you imagine that? You know, so you're making a substitution. For whatever reason, player leaves the pitch, and on his way off the pitch, they give him a yellow card for being slow. Now, maybe he was being deliberately slow. Maybe it's a time-wasting effort, which is a justifiable reason, but kind of very surreal, isn't it? So perhaps he could be a ref that doesn't mind courting controversy. You never know with these refs, because, you say, we had a young ref the other night. I don't know, Mike maybe can quickly. I didn't think the ref was that bad. It was questionable whether the second yellow card should have been a yellow card. It probably would have been if he hadn't been booked, but when you're booked, sometimes you get a final warning. But I don't think the ref did too much wrong the other night, not particularly. He's a young, up-and-coming ref. Obviously, we haven't talked about it, but there is a prospect, if you saw it, Russ, that we're on a charge from the FA for the way that our players reacted and surrounded the ref and pointing fingers at him. So
no, I have not seen that.
Let's hope it's not a points deduction, because obviously that won't help very much. But no, there's apparently the FA are waiting for the referee's report to see what the referee says. It was in the Telegraph today, Daily Telegraph, I believe, that we face a possible rap. Normally you get, I think, a fine for these kind of things more than points deduction. But no, Mike, did you see that?
Mike, are you there? It was Mike? I think we just lost Mike.
No,
yep, that's okay.
I try and do an interesting bit there, and then Mike's left us. So.
That's okay. That's okay. Mike will probably dial back in. It's okay. That's interesting, and that's something to follow, David. I had not seen that, so thank you for sharing that. That's a little worrisome. Obviously.
No, that's right. Yeah.
You know, so that would be something. You know, like I said, hopefully it's just a fine. You know, I can't imagine it's a point deduction. I mean, that would be insane. But who knows? Who knows when it comes to this? And let's just hope that it's just a fine or nothing. You know, and that it wouldn't be a point deduction, because that would be that'd be horrible at this point. All right, David, let's move on while we wait for Mike to dial back in. What does Fulham need to do to win this match?
I think Mike actually has already said the perfect line. Make sure we score first, really.
Okay.
It's just,
okay,
it's
and
just
that's,
been,
you know,
it's,
well, it's been
it's,
a problem.
It's as simple as that, isn't it? I think if we can score first, I mean, that's if we'd have scored first on Wednesday, I think we could have won the match. If we could have scored first at Sheffield Wednesday, we could have won the match. But, yeah, score first.
Okay, score first. Mike is back with us. Mike, David said the key to the match or what the Fulham need to do to win the match is scoring first, and you already said that. Would that be what Fulham really need to do tomorrow? Is there anything else you'd like to add to that?
No, I think it's how we set up, and it's absolutely essential we score first, because we just haven't got the confidence to. We can maybe get an equaliser, but we need to take the game to them, there's nothing to add. We really have to score first, yeah.
Okay, and I understand that totally. Mike, while you had the drop-off, you know, unfortunately, with, you know, Skype issues that we deal with, David brought up a very interesting story in the Telegraph about a potential situation with the FA dealing with the referee. Did you hear anything about this?
Only what I read, and we'll probably get a slap on the wrist and a couple of £1,000 fine. I don't think it's going to be any worse than that. And what I would say is Bettinelli has a rep. And I'm sure David's seen this. He has got a bit of a head on him, where he will rush to the ref. And I think someone has to have a word with him to tell him to calm down in situations like that. But
I totally agree with you. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think it's going to be anything bad. It's nothing compared to what we saw from Chelsea last week, and it's hot, hot temper from everyone. So,
not a problem, Mike. That's another pound I have to donate to the Fulham FC Foundation.
It's all for charity, and
it'll
be fine.
It's all for charity. It totally, and I don't mind doing it, honestly. All right, Mike. I'm gonna go right back to you. Who's the key player for Fulham tomorrow?
I'm going to say Cunnicliffe, actually, because I think
interesting.
With Parker not playing, Cunnicliffe's going to get that starting role almost certainly in the middle, in front of the back four. I hope he doesn't go Cunnicliffe, Hoogland. I really, really do not want to see both of those playing.
I'll get to that when we go to our starting one.
Yeah.
I had a funny feeling you were going to say that.
Yeah, we saw him up at Sunderland play that holding role, and he did it really well, and he's not reached those heights again. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, with Parker out the picture again, can he raise his game and be a leader in the middle of the pitch there? And it's all about shielding those that back four and those central defenders, really.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny that you put it that way. He hasn't been able to play like when you and David saw him at Sunderland, but he was able to do it then, so there's no reason why he can't do it again. That's the way I look at it. But good point by you. He has not been able to do it since then. David, who's your key man in this match?
Well, Mike's ruled him out, but I don't think he's ruled out completely. I mean, I think it would be Scott Parker again if he's playing.
Okay.
Because of the way he holds the team together and drives us forward in a tough away game. I think, as we saw up at Sheffield on a very difficult pitch, Scott Parker was prepared to put his, you know, his safety almost on the line to get himself into challenges and stuff, you know, and be strong. So I think it would certainly be him. If he's not playing, it does obviously comes down to a matter of who's going to be playing. Now, I guess there'll be differences between who I'd like to see playing and who Kit will pick. So I think taking a very kind of safe view, I'd say the key player maybe needs to be Matt Smith because he needs to find the target with any chances he's given or as many as he can, because that would be, you know, he apologised on Twitter, and I assume the apology meant that he was apologising for the fact that he'd, you know, wasted a few good chances rather than anything particularly. That's what I took it to mean. So I think he realises
right.
himself, and that's great that as a striker you've got to have a better conversion rate than that. You know, he's... Yeah, otherwise, we're back in sort of Hugo territory almost. And I think, you know, from what I've seen with Matt Smith, he has got a better conversion rate than that. So I think Matt Smith could really be a key because, you know, especially if Ross McCormack isn't playing, which is probably, you know, the most likely one, you know, he's going to have to, like, find someone else to you know, to supply him, and or he's going to have to do more for himself, and he's going to have to take those chances when they come to him.
Okay. No, good stuff there. All right. All right, David, let's do it now. Let's do your starting 11. Your starting 11, not Kit's starting 11. Your starting 11 and your formation.
Well, I'm going to give up with my trying to predict what Kit will do because it's obvious what Kit's going to do. He's going to pick Richards. He's going to pick Ruiz probably. He's going to pick everyone else. So Bettinelli, but only at the moment because there's no one better. I'm starting to think that Bettinelli could do with a break if we had someone else. It's obviously it's the stress is getting to him a bit as well. So Bettinelli, and you know, I think I'd love to say we should go with a three at the back once again because I really would like to see that. But you know, that's what I would like, but it isn't going to happen. And I know we're picking my team, but still, I'm going to try and balance between what I think will happen and what I'd like. So I'll stick to the four at the back and say I'd actually like to see Grimmer give a go at right back, believe it
okay.
or not. Even that's not just because Mike's on the show. I really actually do mean that. Amabieta left back because I think we need, you know, a bit of height in the back, especially if Grimmer's coming in. We, you know, rather than putting Hoogland at the back, I think I'd like to see Amabieta there as a replacement. And for now, you know, I would stick with the other two as well, Hutchinson and Turner,
okay.
because I feel that probably we will need to utilise Hoogland in midfield. And I'm going to actually say, you know, I must be going absolutely mad, but I'd like to see us play a 4-4-2 again like we did at Sheffield, really.
Okay.
Which means I would actually play Hoogland on the right again.
Okay.
Like we did, because it gives us the option. Obviously, he can drop into the back. He can go into central midfield. And I would say Parker and Tannicliffe in the middle if Parker is fit. If not, I actually would bring in Fofana.
Okay.
It could be risky, you know, but then you know they can fiddle it around. And let's give Alex a go on the left. He's got
okay.
a strong left back behind him. So give Alex a go as he's back in the fold.
Interesting, okay.
It offers us some genuine width and someone to run at them and perhaps a potential source of crossing for Matt Smith. And, yes, I would pick McCormack if he's fit, but if not, I would pick Cawley to go alongside him.
I was going to say Cawley. Good call on that one. I do like Cawley Woodrow and Matt Smith if Ross McCormack cannot go. I like that. All right, Mike, to you.
Okay, so if you look at Kit's sort of notes for today, he does, you know, he mentions Parker and McCormick and with, you know, so that's why I left him out. But definitely Parker, he's always going to be a key player at the moment if he is playing. But I'm going to work on the basis that those two plus Stafalidis are not available or LVC. So I think there's a couple of ways you can play tomorrow. You can look at going sort of like Sheffield Wednesday game, which is a very solid defensive setup with a couple, you know, just with a couple of strikers. So you could go, I'll give you a back four. This is a back four, yeah. Bodaroff at right back, Amabretta at left back, Turner and Byrne as centre backs. And you just tell those four, just defend. That's your job, just defend. And then you have Hoogland, Kavanagh, Fofana and Tunnicliffe. And then you have Woodrow and Smith up front. So that's a team to just defend, if you like, and grind out a draw. But for me personally, I'd go a completely different way. I'd go 4-4-2, attacking wingers. So my team actually would be Bettinelli in goal, Grimmer, Kavanagh as fullbacks. It would be Byrne and Bodaroff at centre-back.
Wow.
And then it would be Tunnicliffe and Fofana in central midfield, Kaká on the left, Roberts on the right, and Woodrow and Smith up front. So there you are. So you go completely the opposite direction. Take the game to Huddersfield. Play with wingers. We've won 1 in 13. Why not make a completely different dramatic change? It's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen, but I vote Mike Gregg for full manager. I like that. I actually like that. I like that ballsy lineup. I like that, Mike. That's actually, I really like that. That's cool. I enjoyed that. All right, we only have three minutes left, so I have to get through the predictions, and I'll go to the phone supporters first. Chris Cox said, I'm afraid 4-0 to Huddersfield Town. Kenneth Elsis said, we lose 5-0. William Kennedy says, bet 3-0. Alan Hammersley said, 6-0 to Huddersfield. Matt Kirk said, the kit man needs to be the kit man. Rory Faulkner said, 27-0. Judith Hopcroft said, not optimistic. I'm afraid 3-1 to Huddersfield. Colm Bugler said 2-2. David Allender says, 3-0 to Fulham. Come on, you whites. And Claire Hollaberry ends it with, I have no idea anymore. And Claire, I'm kind of there with you. Okay. David, to you. Your prediction.
Well, I want to ask for Mike to be sacked straight away as you were appointing him as manager. So
Go ahead. We only have 2 minutes. Go ahead.
And I would take another 1-1 like I did at Sheffield. So that's what I'm going
to say. Okay, 1-1 to David. Mike, what's your prediction?
I was going to say 1-1, but so I will now go 2-1 to Fulham.
Mike, you just made my day. You are the new Fulham manager in my mind, so I'm going to go 2-1. And since Ross McCormack is probably not going to play, I'm now going to say Seiko Fofana is going to score a goal, and so will Matt Smith. Seiko Fofana needs to score. Guys, fantastic show. Mike, it's always great having you back, my friend. Thank you for joining us. I know it was difficult to get home in time, so I really appreciate it, my friend.
Yeah, no problems. Really enjoyed the show.
Okay. And David, excellent show as always, my friend.
Thanks very much. I've reinstated Mike for his 1-1, but then I've sacked him again for his 2-1. But thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, great always to come in with you guys. It's nice to do the show, and I look forward to doing it again soon.
No, listen, it was a great show. It was great to have you, Giannis, and Mike all together. It was really just a tremendous show. I enjoyed it fully. All right, guys, we got to go. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cottage Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can now listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. Well, that's it for this show. For David, Giannis, and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk.
Cheers, thanks.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, thanks. Bye-bye.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look down.